Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Canto 10, Chapter 20, should be text 12. Okay. Shetrani Shasya Sampadvi Shetrani Shasya Sampadvi. Karshakanam mudam dadu, Karshakanam mudam dadu, Maninam anuttapam vai. Daivadinam ajanatam, Shetrani shasya sampadbi, Karshakanam mudam dadu, Maninam anuttapam vai. Daivadinam ajanatam, Daivadinam ajanatam. Please stand. Yetani shasya sampadvi, ladies. Any ladies? Shetrani. The fields. Shasya Sampadvi. With their wealth of grains. Karshakanam. To the farmers. Mudam. Joy. Dadu. Gave. Maninam. And to others who are falsely proud. anutapam, remorse. Vai, indeed. Daiva adinam, the control of destiny. Ajanatam, not understanding. Translation and purport. With their wealth of grains, the fields gave joy to the farmers. But those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under the control of the Supreme. Please repeat. With their wealth of grains, the fields gave joy to the farmers. But those who were those fields created remorse in the hearts of those who were too proud to engage in farming and who failed to understand how everything is under the control of the Supreme. Purport. It is common for people living in the large cities to become miserable and disgusted when there is ample rainfall. They do not understand or have forgotten that rain is nourishing the crops they will eat. Although they certainly enjoy eating, they do not appreciate that with the rain, the Supreme Lord is feeding not only the human beings, but also the plants, animals, and the earth itself. Modern sophisticated people often look down their noses at those engaged in agricultural work. In fact, in American slang, a simple, unintelligent person is sometimes called a farmer. There are also government agencies that restrict agricultural production because certain capitalists fear the effect on market prices. Because of various artificial and manipulative practices in modern governments, we find widespread food shortages throughout the world. Even in the United States, among the poverty-stricken, and at the same time, we find that the governments are paying farmers not to plant crops. Sometimes these governments throw huge amounts of food into the ocean. Thus, the administration of the arrogant and ignorant, those who are too proud to obey the laws of God or too ignorant to recognize them, will always cause frustration among the people, whereas a God-conscious government will provide abundance and happiness for all. Om Agana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Setam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Itamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Dapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshe Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha kopa trubhyascha kripa sindubhyebhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it seems this text purport is a little appropriate and timely. Keshava Prabhu didn't make the big announcement, but last night at the county, our ISKCON temple was approved to go ahead with their development project of and so we'll be creating an eco farm, a special new goshala with young cows and calves and bulls that will be trained up. There will be much more guest housing added. And then we'll be creating conference centers so that we can bring people here and instruct them on this path of Krishna consciousness in various aspects. I know Mother Akuti, Bhakti Charles, and many others are working very hard trying to set up this eco-village and what they call permaculture so that it brings in all the people who are interested in that way of working closely with the earth and the environment, preserving things, protecting, working in harmony with the natural arrangements of Krishna. So this is very good, very exciting news, and of course it's a great opportunity, as Krishna Keshava was mentioning this morning, for us to become more involved in helping to reach more people. In this age of Kali, we can see in this purport as being identified by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who wrote this purport and translated the verse, that the farmers, they're actually ridiculed in America and in the West. They are seen as a low-class group, those who are unable to have a decent livelihood, a respectable occupation. It used to be 100 years ago that the farmers were considered very important to society. They were respected, and many, many people grew up and lived on those farms and continued on. But somewhere in the 30s and 40s and after World War II, that whole culture shifted with the advent of more and more mechanization, big industries. We can see that this is the mentality of the industrialist. Industrialist, the technologist, all these people, that it's so much more important to have an iPhone, an iPod, laptop, computer, than to get rain and grow grains and food and raise cows, protect the cows, and bring milk. And Prabhupada has spoken many times that you cannot eat these nuts and bolts or iPods and laptops. These kind of chips are not very tasty. Everyone depends on these food grains, these foods. Yet we've turned this all over to some other types of businessmen who are now making the life of the citizens of the world hell. Now they've, in the interest of so-called producing better crops, more grains, more food, they've turned their attention towards re-engineering the plants that God has given us, Krishna has given us. So they go in and modify the gene structure of these plants to make them produce better. Big companies have done this. And the result is the ordinary farmers are run out of business. They're run out of business, and the consumers are threatened with the worst health problems in the history of modern civilization. They think they can improve on the products that Krishna has given us, and the result is they cause untold number of diseases when they modify the genetic structures of these plants. So ISKCON here and across the world is trying to show people that no, we have to live in harmony with God. What God has given us, what Krishna has given us, we have to live in harmony. We have to understand how he intended us to live and what is the purpose of human life. Is it to have more gadgets and the one with has the most toys at the end? He's the one who wins, as they say? Or is the person who lives a peaceful, satisfied life and comes closer to understanding his relationship with God and worships and respects God and develops a loving relationship with God? So which person is the one who actually achieves success? Krishna says, it's those who come to know him and serve him. Those are the ones that achieve success. All others are uselessly wasting their time because they're going to come back again and again and again. They can come back life after life after life to try and improve on nature and try to exploit nature for their own benefit. And in the result, they just get birth and death and disease and old age. Only it'll get much intenser in the quality of suffering. Because when man tries to improve on what Krishna has given us, they can't do as good. They make a mess out of it. They destroy the quality of human life. So part of this Goshala eco farm that we're doing is to bring people in and show them the value of farming and cow protection and how to live in harmony with the land, live in harmony with Krishna's, the way Krishna's created it, and the importance of farming. Just yesterday I was discussing with someone who was interested in promoting cow protection. How difficult it is in America to actually take up the banner of cow protection. Because the cow is exploited. If a cow lives to be 7 or 8 years old, they are extremely old in this country. Our cows are living to be 20-some years, and they die naturally. But there, by the time they're 7 or 8, nobody wants to eat them, so they just send them off to the slaughter. They're only seen as entities to be slaughtered and eaten. They don't see them as the value that they are in productive life and protect them. Therefore, they have a horrible situation, a horrible civilization to struggle with. And what is that civilization that they've created described here in this purport? Prabhupada actually, in the book Light of the Bhagavad, he has taken many of these verses and translated them and given a separate purport. So I thought I would read the one that I think applies to this particular verse with illustration number 9. Illustration number 9 is sort of interesting. Prabhupada presented this for a conference he was intending to go to in Japan and present the principles of the Bhagavatam. So he had these drawings made, these pictures. It shows a wealthy merchant in his little castle looking very unhappy, being advised by some very envious, greedy people, while the farmers are in the field living peacefully and growing their crops. And he translates this verse in this way. A picturesque scene of green paddy fields enlivens the heart of the poor agriculturalist, but it brings gloom to the face of the capitalist who lives by exploiting the poor farmers. And then he calls this the lessons from the picture. With good rains, the farmer's business and agriculture flourishes. Like now we're getting good strong rains every day, and anyone who's growing any garden or crops, they can see they grow very quickly right now and grow very nicely. Agriculture is the noblest profession. It makes society happy, healthy, wealthy, honest, and spiritually advanced for a better life after death. The Vaishya community, or the mercantile class of men, can take to this profession. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Vaishyas are described as the natural agriculturalists, the protectors of the cows and the general traders. When Lord Sri Krishna incarnated himself at Vrindavan, he took pleasure in becoming the beloved son of such a Vaishya family. Nanda Maharaj was a big protector of cows. And Lord Sri Krishna, as the most beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, used to tend his father's animals in the neighboring forest. By his personal example, Lord Krishna wanted to teach us the value of protecting cows. Nanda Maharaj is said to have possessed 900,000 cows, and at the time of Lord Sri Krishna, about 5,000 years ago, the tract of land known as Vrindavan was flooded with milk and butter. Therefore, God's gifted professions for mankind are agriculture and cow protection. And then this remaining part also is more specific. Trade is meant for transporting surplus produce to places where produce is scanty. But when traders become too greedy and materialistic, they take to large-scale commerce and industry and allure the poor agriculture to unsanitary industrial towns with a false hope of earning more money. The industrialists and the capitalists do not want the farmer to remain at home, satisfied with his agricultural produce. When the farmers are satisfied by a luxuriant growth of food grains, the capitalist becomes gloomy at heart. But the real fact is that humanity must depend on agriculture and subsist on agricultural produce. No one can produce rice and wheat in big iron factories. The industrialist goes to the villagers to purchase food grains. He is unable to produce in his factory. The poor agriculturalist takes advantage from the capitalist and sells his produce at a lower price. Hence, when the food grains are produced abundantly, the farmers become financially stronger, and thus the capitalist becomes morose at being unable to exploit them. So, a little further insight that this is the mentality that as the in a nice, luxuriant atmosphere where things are growing nicely, the farmers prosper. And the agriculturists are doing very well, and the capitalists become upset. They hoard the grains, and to control the prices, especially to other countries, they stockpile them sometimes for months and years. And they even, if there's too much, rather than give them or sell them at a cheap price, they'll throw them in the ocean. This is famous in America. They stockpile so many grains, and when there's too much, they go with the big ships in the middle of the ocean and just dump them. So ridiculous, so envious, so greedy. It's all about money. It's not about feeding people or sharing the bounty that Krishna has given. It's just about money. And so this is a very unfortunate and difficult situation for the ordinary citizen of the state. And it becomes very difficult for the farmers to continue to live in such circumstances. The small farmers are run out of business. Some devotees here are from countries other than the U.S. where they know that the small farmers, they grow, it's the common in those countries, South America, Central America, or even in Africa, that the small farmer actually grows and subsists, and he can become wealthy by growing food and selling food. And he lives closer to nature, so he's very respectful of God, more religious-minded. Whereas the industrialists, the modern people living in the cities, they become easily atheistic. So busy earning money, but no time to worship God. So this is the progress of Kali Yuga. And then Srila Vishnuvada Chakravarti Thakur, he gives us further commentary. He said, proud man proclaims, Farming is a lowly job which I cannot do. But when the fields yield abundant crops, he regrets, quote, if I had done some farming, I would get wealth in this, during this rainy season. So in this way, the fields give joy to the farmer and pain to the lazy man, because such a person does not understand that his suffering is under the laws of karma. Similarly, seeing the man on the Nivritti Marga, the path of renunciation, attain liberation, the man on the path of sense gratification, Pravritti Marga, laments, this example is not attractive to the devotee. So this is the station, the position. Those who are sense gratifiers, they're not happy to see those who are the path of restricting and avoiding sense gratification. They're not happy to see them prosper or to make progress on their path. Only those who are serious about spiritual life. Last night we were discussing, and I have my wife and I have a bhakti riksha group. We meet once a week. So last night we had a bunch of new people came, 8 new people came to our group. It was very nice. And we were discussing, what is the purpose of human life? And after reading Prabhupada's discussions from Science of Self-Realization, quite clear to everyone, the purpose of human life wasn't to make money or to live just a pleasant, happy family life, home setting, but was actually to obtain God realization, Krishna consciousness. And that Krishna consciousness is the best way to attain this. It is the process that these people have been looking for. They're dissatisfied with other religious processes. They don't offer a real step-by-step program to advance towards understanding God and a relationship and living in that relationship. Nor do they know when they actually achieve it, what it is they have to achieve. So religion then just becomes a nominal tool, which is sometimes used by the materialists to further produce more unnecessary goods, to encourage mankind to continue this terrible, unnecessary cycle. So, these are all very important topics that we are, as devotees, we are privileged to know about. And here, specifically in New Ramanreti Farm, we have the opportunity to participate in performing these activities and participate in preaching about them, spreading this news. As I was speaking about earlier, this concept of cow protection is quite unknown, especially in American society. One time I was driving down the highway going through Texas, and we were coming to stop in one town in North Texas. And as you drove along the highway, there were these huge fields, fenced-in fields, practically no grass left, and they were full of hundreds and thousands of cows. But they weren't raising them for any particular purpose. These cows were all stationed there, ready to go to the slaughterhouse. And on the radio reports, there was hourly reports how many cows were being slaughtered that day. And it was in the thousands. Thousands and thousands were slaughtered each day. So this is the mood, that we are going against that tide. We're telling people this is not the right way to live. This is not the purpose of the cows. This is not the way God intended us to live with the land. But rather, we are to live in harmony with nature and to serve God and to please God and protect the cows, which are so dear to Him and so important to human society. You can see, I think many of you may have seen, as you go down I-75 towards Ocala, there's one big billboard, and they have a picture of some meal, and they said, this is where vegetarians go when they cheat. You've seen that? It's a bit ridiculous. Like, oh, even vegetarians still want to eat our meat. So they think that meat is a natural food substance for all humankind. But it's not. It's not necessary. And so it requires vigorous preaching, showing that not only are we vegetarian, but we're trying to please God and serve God and live in harmony with the way God has given nature to work, performing the noble professions of farming, cow protection, agriculture. These are all quite important and quite necessary. Because people, nowadays they go in the supermarket, right? And they have no idea where all this food came from. I'm surprised now you go into the, and you try to buy vegetables, and you find half of them are coming from South America. They're not even grown in Florida or anywhere else close by. They're coming from Chile and Argentina and Brazil and other faraway places. And they have to be shipped all the way here so that I can have something to eat. This is totally unnatural. Totally unnatural. And human society cannot subsist like that. Then you have to pick the things. They're not even ripe. You ship them long distances to get them in the store. The prices are extraordinarily inflated because of all this extra. And then the people have to work so much harder to get more money just so they can purchase food. Is this not ridiculous? Does this make any sense? I know, like Trivikram Prabhu, he at one time was a farmer. And he knows that you can produce so much food, right? Acres and acres of food, much more than one person can eat. You had like, what, 20 acres? And you could produce so much food, you had to sell it in the market. And it was a good profession. But difficult because there's so many big businesses to compete with that just push the farmer out. Push him out of business. Right? Out of business. Because they cannot compete with the big, big productions and the big, big... And then the government pays those big farmers to grow food and discourages the small farmers in that way. Totally unnatural. And now even they have these companies again that they try to modify the gene structure of these foods. Recently I heard or read that there was a big shipment of wheat that was sent from America to Europe. And when they tested that wheat and they found it was genetically modified, they refused the whole shipment. They said, we don't want your food. We want food that's been grown according to God's arrangement, not some genetically modified. So governments, not only citizens, but governments are refusing these processes of artificially manipulating human food, the plants that God has given us, Krishna has given us. So let me stop here. I'm sure some of you have a few comments or realizations. We're all living in this society. Trivikram, yes, Prabhu. The realizations of a farmer.
Farming, actually, I took up the farming just to pursue this Varnashram philosophy, but it's not my real dharma. See, anyhow, what I was thinking, especially with the cows, is that as long as they see that the cow is for food, unless this mentality is changed, then this kind of a cow killing would go on.
Yes.
For the whole age, you see? Because and I think because it's within the scriptures of the Quran, within the Quran and within the Bible, Bible not so clearly, but in the Quran it's clearly stated, you know. As long as that exists, you'd get strong opposition about cow killing. Mm. But it means we have to preach strong. That's the only.
Definitely. I know that in the first few months when I was becoming a devotee, back around 1975, I was living at home with my family, and they were all Catholics, Christians. I was raised and trained in that tradition, but once I understood the Bhagavad Gita, they used to criticize, why are you becoming vegetarian? So I'd point out to them, in the very first book of the Bible, in Genesis, how it explains that the animals are meant for protection by the humans, and that the foods and the grains and the fruits, these are the food for mankind. And they were just like, totally, this is not right. That something, you've misinterpreted this. And I said, this is what God's plan was for us. And then you did something else. Mm-hmm. You insisted on eating meat, and so many problems came. So many wars, so many rebellions against God. So they had a big problem with that. But it seemed very clear to me that this was God's original instruction in the Bible, from the very first book of Genesis. But we find that these major religions, they don't believe in vegetarian foods. They insist on their eating meat. Anyone else? And more question? Mahamaya? And we have also the leaders of the world. You know, like we had a former president of the United States. He had a big cattle ranch, and he used to invite all the important diplomats and leaders of world governments and U.S. government to his ranch, and he would feed them sumptuously. But before feeding them, he would go out and slaughter a cow and cook it and feed it to them. So right there, right on the can, he was slaughtering a cow. So this is, with this kind of example of our leaders, you know, people go astray. Yes, Mama, sorry.
Yeah, just going along with what you're saying, you know, we've sort of been brainwashed, I guess you could say, that we live in such a wonderful country and we're, you know, leaders of the world and all these things that, you know, people say. And yet our leaders don't even, there was a law that was they were trying to pass in California that they would mark the foods as genetically modified. And it didn't go by. But the people aren't going to give up. Mm. You know, they're just getting started, they say, but they're definitely going to fight it. So it's interesting that other countries wouldn't even accept it. In our country, we don't even know that we're eating it.
Yeah, we're not allowed to know that when you buy food from the grocery store, it has all these cancer-producing, genetically modified foods in them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just also wanted to say that I was reading somewhere recently where it wasn't that long ago, maybe it was like the late 1800s, that up to that time, something like 80% of the population were involved in agriculture.
Yes.
You know, and now it's like less than 5% or something.
Yeah, very small.
Yeah. Unnatural.
Agriculture is not even listed as a pleasant occupation because less than 1% of the population is involved
with it. Wow, less than 1% of the people are farmers now, so it's not considered an occupation. Yes, Madan Mohan.
The university just down here, don't they have a big isn't that an agri college? They have all their...
Where, at the University of Florida?
Yeah.
They do, but like, you know, one lady who's living here, an Indian lady, devotee, Priti, she said that she went and studied agriculture in college. And her focus was simply how to preserve foods and by storing them in cold storage or other ways and treating them so that they would sit in storage for a year or longer. You know, not like you can grow more and then feed the people immediately. No, so you can put them in storage so that way you can have, you know, cauliflowers in September or whatever. opposite of the growing season, because there is a market. And in America, there is like this huge trade exchange where they set the prices of different grains and sugar and orange juice and milk. And when they invest in those, and they change the prices. And by that, though, that trade exchange, which is like the stock market, considered part of the stock market, they can change the price of food on our shelves. And the only people making money on it are the big investors. The farmers aren't getting anything. If by their investing, the price of sugar goes from, or wheat goes from, let's say $1 a pound, they can raise it to $2 a pound and nobody will be able to afford it. That happened some years ago with the price of sugar. It became so high that people didn't want to buy it anymore. They couldn't afford it. And it was all due to investments. So these are the capitalists. They see how to manipulate and control these products, even though they have no interest in growing them, no interest in living with them. Yes, Trivikram Prabhu.
I was thinking, on a small scale, devotees should try to grow some produce just for their home use. You know, it's a simple thing. Even if they have a few eggplants and okra and peppers, you know, and then it'd be like organic, no spraying or anything. It's, you know, because we're all vegetarians, we have to get vegetables. But
yes,
most of us here have land, you know, and
yes, here,
it's such a simple thing.
Here around Alachua, to build a house you have to have, or have a house you have to have, what, 5 acres of land minimum.
So about 50% of the devotees have land here.
And you know, during World War II in America, the government so much encouraged people, they told them to turn their, and even they live in the cities, turn their front lawns into gardens. They called them victory gardens. They were trying to encourage people to grow their own food so that the farmers could come and work in the factories. Oh, the biggest problem here, Charles will tell us here.
Lawn grass.
What is it?
Lawn grass. Look, your front lawn.
The front lawn.
Biggest crop, and it consumes the most amount of chemicals and it creates the most amount of pollution and everything else. So.
Yeah, people spend thousands and thousands of dollars yearly just to grow grass, which they cut and throw away. Oh, Keshava, you want to say something?
Yeah. On the other hand, we see like here in Alachua County, you know, they don't allow people to divide their land in less than 5 acre plots, just to help agriculture, trying to get people to do agriculture. And there's also so much help and assistance, you know, like if you need some education on agriculture, there's the extension of the university and everything that, you know, you can actually really get into agriculture on a big scale if someone wants to. And it seems like there's a lot of help in that regard.
There is some help, but we have to understand when this government offered help, it's not always the kind of help you're looking for. Just like we're talking about these genetically modified grains. So as they were first coming out, and for example, they're modifying corn and soybeans, which they got passed by the USDA as a valuable food, their modified structures. And then later other groups tested the results after people ate these for 2 years and found out they were ruining their liver and their kidneys, and that they're developing cancer colon from these things. But their tests only lasted 6 weeks, and that's how they got improved. So then they got Supreme Court approval that nobody can use their seeds but them. They have to pay them. So what would happen is one farmer would buy those seeds and plant them. And then as they grew, naturally the seeds they produce more seeds, they pollinate, and this, you know, go from in the sky, and they blow around. And those, that pollen then pollinated the next door neighbor's crops. And they become crossbred, they call them. So they picked up some of the qualities of those genetically modified. Then those same seed-producing companies that produce the genetically modified plants, they would go to the neighbor and test his seeds and find out that now they look like the seeds they were selling, and they would sue that new farmer who had never bought their crop and put him out of business for stealing their seeds. And the farmer couldn't afford to go to court and fight them, because they're a big business. They got millions and millions. And here's a poor farmer. He was just growing his crops, and suddenly now he's out of business. Because the Supreme Court of United States of America said, no, you cannot use their seeds. And nature just blew the pollen, and they crossed with their own seeds. And this has gone on many, many times around America. And this is another way these big industrialists have put the small farmer out of business. That either you buy our seeds or we'll put you out of business. And you buy their seeds, then why? Oh, now you have to buy our weed killer. You spray those down. When you spray all this weed killer down, that kills every plant, only their corn and soybeans will continue to grow. Everything else will die. But those corn and soybeans soak up all that poison, and they just don't die. So when you eat it, you eat all that stuff. But people don't know that this is what's happening. And they buy those foods on the shelves because they're not informed in the least what they're eating. And they think it's just food.
But doesn't the label say GMO?
No. Not required in America.
Not required now.
Not required in America. In Australia, they're required to put the genetically modified foods on a different shelf. They cannot even keep them on the same shelf. But in America, they don't even have to mention what they're buying. So you read something, you buy something, and then you look, oh, it's got sugar, corn syrup, all genetically modified. They modified the sugar beets, they modified the corn that made the corn syrup, and you're eating all these poison foods. And they're going to cause liver damage, kidney damage, colon cancer, on and on. So this is a product of this purport, what Prabhupada and others are describing. The envy, the competition, with the capitalists, with the farmers. Okay, well, are you going to get hit? You're farther away, so, and you spoke once. So you get second.
Yeah, they try to modify the soil too, so they spray the skies with all kind of chemicals. And you see these big, long trails in the sky called chemtrails.
Yeah.
So I called the University of Florida and asked them, you know, who was behind this, what they were doing. They said, well, we don't know. They transferred to another department, about four different departments, and then just
got lost, huh?
But then they're an agricultural university, you know.
Agriculture means they're supporting the big agribusinesses. They're not supporting much on the little farmers.
And Jimmy Carter, previous president, he wanted to host a vegetarian banquet in the White House.
Mm.
And it was boycott because he was a peanut farmer previously. Yeah. And he knew how to make things out of peanuts, you know, that would simulate what they were eating in meat products. So it was boycotted by the beef industry, meat industry.
Yeah, that's another
thing. He couldn't do it, you know. Even the leader of the United States, he can't do anything. His hands are tied if he wants to.
They have big, big lobbies in America influencing the political, the Congress and everybody. So that they produce meat and everything else is restricted. They spend millions every year, the meat industry, on political lobbyists. So, Mom, I had one comment, and then I think we'll stop. So you can see what a fight it is in America, especially to talk about eco-farming, natural living, cow protection. Big, big industries, big, big groups fighting against.
I just wanted to encourage devotees who, even if you don't have 5 acres of land, even if you just have... it actually, even if you're living in a city and you have nothing, there's many examples around America of different cities that citizens will find an empty lot and get permission to make a garden, and they do a whole cooperative thing. And I mean, I'm really impressed that they'll even get... there's some cities where they've organized it to the point where somebody will grow one type of food, one type of plant, vegetable, and somebody else will grow another type of vegetable, and then they'll do a co-op thing to share. As opposed to, like, if you have your own little plot, you might think, oh, I have to have my variety to make it interesting. But people in the cities where, you know, typically you're finding apathy and no one cares about anybody else, but there have been successful cooperatives and, you know, really very little land.
And it would be very nice if we could work towards doing that in our community. I know at my house, for example, we planted 6 zucchini plants. And we got so many zucchini, my wife was taking them into the school, I think Mother Kadasi knows, and handing out zucchini to everybody. And it's like, wow, how do you get all these zucchinis? You know? Plant a row of beans, and we're eating beans for 3 weeks. Practically at every meal. But I mean, just say that's the point, that nature produces so much. So, but then we have to import things from Chile and Argentina so we can eat. This is totally ridiculous, you know. Anyway, we should stop here. I thank everyone. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Glory to Srimad Bhagavatam.